everyone. Hi, thank you for tuning in, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Henrik, and this is Red Ice Radio. Good to be back with you again. At the end of the last show, I think I said, we'll talk to you after the weekend, but it seems like we have to do a show every day now to be able to keep up with all the developments, but we're doing the best we can. Well, the website is redicecreations.com. And if you're a fan, if you listen regularly and like what we do and want to hear more and support us and help to keep us free from commercial interruptions, please check out redicemembers.com for our full archives from 2006 up till today and growing every week. And that includes video specials, inside episodes, and films. And with more of you guys and gals supporting us, the more we will be able to produce as well. We have Jay Dyer back with us today for a show on the San Bernardino shooting and the strange circumstances surrounding this case. We are going to speak about false flags, the reality of government conspiracies, including the ongoing conspiracy of replacing the population and the importation and promotion of Islam in the West. We are also going to talk about ISIS and also more on how the global power use these events to cause more problems that will drive more migrants from the Middle East into Europe and into the West. Stay tuned. Good show ahead. Welcome back, Jay. It's good to talk with you again. Hope you've been doing well. It's quite a few things that have occurred since we spoke last time. It's good having you back.
Thank you. It is quite a few things, although it seems to be a recycled repeat of things that we talk about. So,
right.
The initial, we talked about Charlie Hebdo about a year ago, and it was a very similar situation, and I've called the Paris attacks Charlie Hebdo 2.0. And so it's quite curious to me that the first Charlie Hebdo attacks were supposedly Al-Qaeda, and then as we move to the Paris attacks, it becomes apparently ISIS. And then now we're having similar situations in the U.S. with all the same markers.
Well, exactly. I mean, we've had just a ton of events unfolding, and I wanted to speak a bit about those today, beginning with, I think, the San Bernardino shootings in California, because it's most fresh in our memory, if you will, but then kind of work our way forward to the connection with ISIS, or Islamic State, and how beneficial this group has been to those who want to destabilize the Middle East and also drive more migrants into Europe. It's all kind of playing together, and it's an ongoing conflict, of course, now as well, but with Syria in the center, we have Russia and Turkey becoming major players in this, so we have a lot to discuss here, but let's see if we can begin on San Bernardino a bit and talk about Farouk Saeed and his wife, Tashfeen Malik, and what you've gathered from the event so far, because it's been very bizarre watching it unfolding, as usual, of course. But the latest story that came out today was, of course, that the whole scene there at their home, despite that there's a criminal investigation is going on, was media was allowed to come in there.
It's completely preposterous, and it's not just the media. It's also suspects, it's victims' families.
Right.
Ransack the suspect's home. Come on.
I know.
Completely preposterous and retarded.
I saw one of the guys there on CNN sitting, some kind of analyst, who's shaking his head. He didn't know what the hell was going on. He never seen anything like that. There should have been some kind of control.
No one has.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the scene in the film Nightcrawler with Jake Gyllenhaal that came out last year, where the film centers around him as this, there's a name for the people who go out and try to shoot crash videos, and the name escapes me at the moment, but it's more of a phenomenon, I guess, of the 80s and 90s, where you filmed the brutality first. You could go and maybe pawn what you filmed to a local news station so that they could run it that night. Anyway, so in the film, Gyllenhaal kind of takes a darker path as he seeks more and more so to find the most gruesome footage that he can, kind of like a Faces of Death type thing. And then he gets to the point where he realizes, actually, if I get to the crime scene first, I can alter the crime scene and kind of Hollywood it up, stage it, make it look even more brutal and dramatic than it actually was. And this, of course, is how he begins to rise through the ranks of local news and media. Now, that's very telling, I think, because it shows the massive level of coordination, and this is what I think a lot of people have a hard time grasping or accepting, is how coordinated the media actually can be. And they can stage things very well. And because in the U.S. we have such an intricate relationship between the mass media, the military, the Pentagon, the intelligence agencies, and even the local media stations, who openly will discuss the fact that the military will send soldiers to local news outlets to run and learn psyops. There are plenty of news clips that demonstrate this. And so you have to understand that when we have what are called by some capstone events that involve these drills, now you have to understand that the drills are constantly going on, right? There's the militaries, the agent, the military, these agencies, they're constantly running drills. And part of the reason they do this is to keep the impression going that perpetual fear is what you should feel, to have everybody constantly feeling like anything can happen at any moment. This is why they will do unannounced drills, right, which frighten children, school children, and all this kind of stuff. This is all covert black op type stuff. And so we have the LA Times the very day of this event writing up a big piece that the people involved supposedly in this event, they thought it was a drill because, quote, the LA Times says, drills run at this facility every month or so.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they have a mass shooter drill every month or so. Now, some reports were saying that there were 500 to 1,000 agents on the scene within an hour. That's a small army. How do you mobilize 500 within no time to be?
I was watching the live feeds, and I was very, very impressed with how quickly a lot of people were there. And I was saying to Lana, I was like, where were all these people just like, I don't know, half an hour ago? Were they all just around in the area or what? I was like,
exactly. If you've lived in the big areas like that, and even in Nashville itself, not too far from me, there was an event, so-called event, a few months ago in Antioch, where all of the agencies managed to have 120 agents present for a so-called theater shooting, which involved no guns, no shooting, and a person being bruised. And yet 120 agents arrived. There was a bunch of grandstanding and, of course, 20 minutes or so of news footage of everyone talking about how great they were in their response time. So this is what we see, is that they'll use these events, that is immediately the prepackaged news narrative begins to run. They come on, local so-called officials are talking about how awesome their response time is and how all of that funding that was put into the budget that year for this bloated agency was all put to good use, right? But now in this present situation with San Bernardino, yeah, I find it really hard to believe that this many agents could be mobilized. It happens to be, I'm seeing at least reports of a drill running concurrently with this. So all of the exact same earmarks of baloney and a media psyops, really just a created media event. And once again, the magical passport shows up in this invasion scenario where the media invades the killer's supposed house. And there's just passports laying there. And so we know that they went to Saudi Arabia. Now, mm-hmm. I'd like to add that I've had people critical of my arguments that these kinds of events are false flag stage scenarios, is because they'll say, well, the establishment would not want to portray Saudi Arabia in a bad light. So there's no way that they would make the passports into, you know, Iranian passports or something. Well, all we have to do is think back to 9/11. They had no problem with their BFF best buddies, Saudi Arabia, being the origin of many of the hijackers.
Right.
And this has been mainstream news since 9/11 that hijackers originated from Saudi Arabia. So the location really has nothing to do with it, because it's not about – plus they're saying that the guy's Pakistani. Farouk is Pakistani.
I thought there was a wife, but yeah.
Oh, was it just – so is he Saudi and the wife's Pakistani?
I think so, but okay. Yeah, I knew he went to Saudi Arabia where he met his Pakistani wife. That's what okay. I read, but you know, who knows?
Okay.
There's so much inconsistencies in the beginning of these things anyway.
There yeah. is. And the other interesting thing about that is that they're not showing the wife.
No, I haven't seen a single photo. Nothing.
Exactly.
Yet.
Yep. Why are they not doing that? Well, this is exactly what they did at Charlie Hebdo when the Boudoumian, who's the supposed consort of Koulibaly, or however you pronounce that, they didn't show her for several days. And then what you noticed in that storyline was that she eventually disappeared from the story, and they said that she had nothing to do with it, supposedly. That was what happened. And so I would agree with Patrick Henningsen here that that's probably what we're going to see in this event, is that they're going to write her out of the script. Because I literally think that these events are scripted, and that's how you get not just mainstream media coordination, but you also can get Hollywood coordination. Now, I'm not saying that I've seen yet any necessarily fictional film corresponding to this yet. I won't be surprised if we don't see something like that, though, which we did see with the Paris attacks with the film Made in France, which featured posters all over France with an Islamic jihadi attack. And then the film was not released due to the similarities with the Paris attacks.
Mm. You know, I thought there was, we'll get deeper into this too. We're really trying to get into the, you know, the false flag, how it plays into everything that's happening. And also the flip side of that, of a critique of always going the false flag or not recognizing some of the other problems. We'll get to that later. But I thought there was three initially, at least, it seemed like. And
that's what
the same
thing
there,
yeah.
Right?
That's what they said, right?
One was dropped, nothing came of it. They didn't even discount and say, oh, it was misreports or anything like that.
Yeah, I tuned in when this all began to the local, I believe, ABC affiliate there in California, and they were what was interesting was they were immediately interviewing so-called witnesses. Now, the first witness was a portly Hispanic chick who was laughing, so she thought that the event was somewhat humorous. Why this would be humorous, I don't know. Then they went to a guy who said that his brother was on the SWAT team and that the FBI had this all locked down. There was no need to worry about any further disturbances because the FBI had taken over. Now, that's a key parallel that we see in all these events like this. Obviously, the FBI wouldn't be in France, but I'm saying in the U.S. domestic situations. And this goes back to the recent Chattanooga shooting event, the FBI locked that down, TBI, which is the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation. And then the FBI locks this one down. And what that does is that allows the federal agencies to trump any of the local law enforcement that might not go along with how it's needing to go in terms of the media and the display. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody involved in the interagency drill or whatever knew what was going on or knew what would happen. You don't have to have everybody involved in this knowing. It would really be the people at the top, I think, is how this stuff is done. And then, you know, the other people in these situations just simply don't know. It's because it's compartmentalized knowledge. It's much like how intelligence agencies are run. So I think that closed loop that we see in terms of the media will consistently, and they'll even openly say this, we don't have any reports yet from officials. And so they're only going to report the info that comes directly from the FBI. They're not going to report, as we tend to think of what a journalist would do, go to the situation and try to investigate. That's not what they do. They're there to receive a talking point and then repeat that out. And so it's very curious, too. I even saw the media using strange terminology. Shepard Smith talking about they've staged the event, he says in one of the clips. Now, why he would say that, I don't know. They talked about the three shooters initially being the three actors in the event. Could be coincidence. I'm not trying to make too much out of that. But just strange terminology being used here. Now, that does, and all this is not to say that there's not legitimate multi-culti chaos due to trying to force everybody into monoculture.
Right, exactly. We'll get to that later. There's many things to churn out here. But, well, what we can say first here is that no, obviously, clear motive has been you know, kind of established, as they would say, yet. We don't know why this inland regional center, kind of for, I guess, kind of social services for disabled people and whatnot. And he obviously he worked there, it seems like. And we don't know. But obviously, if you were watching the live feed, I mean, there was a pretty good shootout, obviously, and some pretty good kind of messy scene, for the lack of a better term. I saw some of the cell phone footage of when cops were flying by and they were shooting at the vehicle and whatnot as well. You know, pretty interesting. But from your angle on this, how do we explain that? Where do you go when it comes to, like, actually killing people here?
Well, I don't know, nor do we know exactly what went down in this event. So the videos that I saw a guy who filmed from behind a bush, cops running by, and you hear gun sounds. Then we see the aerial footage of the car, the SUV being pulled over, the police apparently being surrounding the vehicle, and we see what looks like a woman laying on the ground. It's hard to tell. It's a body of some sort. And we see it. The SUV looks to be shot up. Maybe I just haven't seen it, but I've not yet seen any actual shooting of the SUV or the. And now I would add too that I'm not just going on a predetermined presupposition about how I'm going to interpret these videos that I see, because there are other very overt contradictions in what's been told to us about what happened. So we were told that this guy got mad at over a Christmas dinner. Very strange, first of all, that a radical Islamist would attend a Christmas dinner. I don't think that seems a little strange to me.
Cultural appropriation. Yeah.
Right, and then so we're told that they got angry. There was some scuffle of some sort, and then they just got into a tizzy and went and set booby traps.
And he brings his wife and just comes in and with automatic weapons and kills everybody,
yeah.
Or trying to at least, yeah.
Right.
Seems a little harsh.
Well, but if this is a result of an evening altercation that presumably was not planned, then why you would not be? How would you have time to go set booby traps? I mean, that just sounds
right.
Impossible.
No.
And now, where have we heard this booby trap scenario before? Well, this was James Holmes. Was his apartment was supposedly rigged with all of these booby traps? Right. I don't think any of that's true. I think that's just made up. And can I prove that? I can't prove that, but I do know that these stories tend to be so sensational and so over the top, and then the details don't add up, that what that does is put me into a position of epistemic doubt, you know, where I don't have any reason to believe what they're telling me is true, so all I can do is go by the evidence before me. And not being there, the evidence before me is completely contradictory, so that makes me think that this is completely a staged scenario. And then what we see today with this media rampaging into the house is just the ultimate preposterous sign that I don't even think they take. I think they think it's funny. It's almost it's humorous, right? To be able to display before everyone that, oh, we can actually send everybody into the crime scene or part of the crime scene, which is what the people's apartment would be, part of the crime scene. Everybody can just rummage through it, and everyone is still going to believe what we tell them, despite the ridiculous absurdities involved in this. And you have to understand that's how extensive the connections between the military, the psyops, the black ops, the fusion centers, FEMA, that's how all interconnected all of this is, especially in the U.S.
Yeah, I was going to play that clip. I'll do that in a second here. I just need to find that here. But, yeah, so basically I think we have to drop some of these leads, whatever you want to call them, but this idea that there was some kind of altercation at the workplace there, whatever. I think these are just, there's so many of these rumors and, you know, people assume they make things up. Who knows where some of the media even get some of the information from. And it just comes out all wrong. And we sit here with a puzzle, all these puzzle pieces, and trying to fit this together when it's like that piece shouldn't even be part of it, right? So, as you say, so we're stuck with like, okay, what can we actually see in front of our eyes? What's actually happening? That's the only thing we have to go on, because the rest of the information is obviously given to us by the authorities. And how can we possibly trust that?
Exactly. Right. A media entourage of what, 40 or 50 random members, or excuse me, 40 reporters and then 50 random members of the public who claim to be victims, family members, are allowed through a forced entry into a situation that the FBI and the feds have on lockdown. That is complete and utter absurdity.
I know.
It's just as ridiculous, by the way, as the footage of, say, this is what it reminded me of. It bears striking resemblance to the footage of the invasion of the bin Laden compound. And if you can't see that the bin Laden compound invasion is preposterous and fake, I mean, there's not more I could argue with you if you think that whole scenario is real. But that's a great one to go to because it shows how easy it is that. And I think there have even been studies done. I've heard some friends of mine talk about this. I haven't actually looked it up, but people have actually done studies that a lot of humans, I don't know the exact percentage, but they'll actually believe what they hear on media even before their eyes. What they will actually witness with their eyes, they will actually defer to what mainstream media tells them the event was beyond even what they saw.
That's where they bring in the experts, explain what you just saw, interpret it for us, give us the whole picture. And I've actually noticed that myself sometimes when I don't kind of keep myself focused, and then I go back and revisit, you know, when I'm focused, and I was like, geez, how could I miss that? That was incredible. And I believed the interpretation that someone gave to me. Quite scary, actually.
Right. There have been plenty of psychological experiments that show this, you know, back to the Milgram experiments, these kinds of things that demonstrate this principle. But, you know, it really is a question of, I think, epistemology or knowledge. I mean, I don't know that anyone was shot. Does that mean that I can say for certain that I know no one was? No. It just simply means that I think I take a rational stance here where I can look at the history of these kinds of operations, and I can see how many times the mainstream media, especially CNN and the BBC, they seem to be two of the worst being caught at this phenomena of just outright staging news with green screens and making stuff up. So it becomes laughable. And I mean, there's just so much preposterous evidence that shows complete contradictions, complete stagecraft with, say, the bin Laden raid. And then you can look at even the mainstream media itself will write articles such as in The Atlantic talking about how, oh, well, they just happened to build in North Carolina a complete replica of the bin Laden compound, and it looks just like it, and this is where the military is going to practice how they're going to raid the bin Laden compound. But I don't want to move too far ahead yet because you may still want to talk about this, but
right.
Can you stop and think about the number of military bases that the U.S. has globally. And then when you think about where they're positioned, such as places like Qatar or, you know, with CENTCOM moving their operations to Qatar in 2002, and then you think about the fact that there's a U.S. military base in Turkey right near Syria, it starts to become a little bit clearer that, well, so wait a minute, was bin Laden really running around secretly and hiding in a compound in Pakistan, a nation whose intelligence agency was created by by British intelligence, the ISI. It's really hard to believe.
Let's just listen to the clip here of the home being raided here.
Harry, it just strikes me as bizarre what we're seeing. I mean, I guess at some point the police give up the crime scene and somebody else takes it over.
Anderson, I'm having chills down my spine what I'm seeing here. This apartment clearly is full of evidence. I don't see any fingerprint dust on the walls where they went in there and checked for fingerprints for other people that might have been connected with these two. You've got documents laying all over the place. You've got shredded documents that need to be taken out of there and put together to see what was shredded. You have passports, you got driver's licenses. Now you have thousands of fingerprints all over inside this crime scene. Now, there should have been some crime scene tape up there. Usually in an instance like this, if crime scene goes in and does the work and comes out, you still keep that scene locked up.
Yeah.
And with a sign on board saying you cannot come in until the police release it. The fact is, maybe that they did not do that here. And I tell you, I am so shocked, I cannot believe it. This is Detective 101 for crying out loud. And we have, now we have, it looks like dozens of people, and they're totally destroying a crime scene, which is still vital in this investigation, because we don't know how many other people that they were connected
right.
with yep. in this thing. So there might be tons of fingerprints in there that we need to look at to see if there's any kind of connection with those fingerprints or some people that might be on a watch list or something else. I'm really shocked here that the police, if the police are watching this right now, they better be on their way down there to be able to stop this from happening, because this is... I'm shaking over it. That's how irresponsible this is for law enforcement for letting
right.
this happen.
Okay, so there we go. So what's remarkable about this is that they, it's just kind of being done out in the open, right in front of everybody. It's almost like when I was watching when all the people, they were coming from these buses, I guess they were being bussed in from this other center. The reporter said that they had been briefed, right? All the people had been briefed. And they needed to go to this other facility where they could go to meet their relatives. Everything was hyper-managed here. And the media was there. Some of the channels was there. And they tried to flag down a couple of people and say, hey, oh, excuse me. You know, they tried to be all, you know, sensitive with these people because they went through something horrible, you know. And they're like, ma'am, excuse me, can I, you know. And they just kept going. And the few who did stop were actually... kind of a cop came up, or I think they said something else said on their back there, but they came up and kind of broke them apart and said, you have to go into this room now, you can't stay here, blah, blah, blah. And it wasn't until probably, I don't know, 5-10 minutes later that a few walked up that actually was answering some of the questions anyway. So it seemed to be hyper-managed at the same time as
yes.
it's done right there live in front of everybody. So they've said... let's not kind of ban the media from being here. That would be too obvious. Let them just be here, but let's just kind of control and manage the situation. It's just, it's so bizarre, very bizarre.
It is bizarre, and I think the bizarreness of it is to kind of give you a little bit of conspiracy candy. It'd be like the Bin Laden library. It contains Fritz Springmeier and David Ray Griffin books. And so, you know, Bin Laden's personal library just happens to be like, you know, the conspiracy bookshelf at Brave New Books or something. I mean, it's completely laughable.
And where was this library again?
It was in the news, mainstream media, about 3 or 4 months ago. During the summer, there was a big release of that Bin Laden's personal library had been discovered and handed
personal.
Over.
Okay, yeah.
And his personal library was all conspiracy books, literally. I'm not kidding. Like, it was literally that he reads 9/11 Truth, and that he reads Springmeier. So, in other words,
really?
It's a joke. Yeah. The guys at the Pentagon script this stuff, and they get a kick out of it. And it's not any different with these situations, I believe, in terms of local staging and psyops. So, I would add as well that... If what I'm saying sounds far-fetched, if that sounds a little too much, well, first of all, look at what your eyes just, well, I guess hear what your ears just heard. You just saw CNN reporting this. And Anderson Cooper is standing there, you know, acting like he can't believe this, and the terror analyst or whoever that was on there with him is, you know, I can't believe that. We just can't believe this. If you've been in around these kinds of scenarios, it's hyper-managed,
yes,
as you said. It's not a situation where, you know, you can just go do whatever you want. Now, if you think that it's hard to manage crowds, it's not, because if you've ever been an extra on a set, you can tell, you know, people. I was an extra in a situation with 500 people being directed in a downtown scene setting. And everyone was very, very obeyant, right? They were very, in other words, it's not hard to move and manipulate a crowd is what I'm trying to say. And you have to understand, too, think about Hollywood. Think about all of the money, all of the actors that are out of work, all of the media companies, all of the studios, and how it all ties into, you know, the same five or six corporations that own the media in the U.S. And if you have a hard time understanding how it can be coordinated, that's all you have to do is think about what Disney owns. Disney owns a massive chunk of the media. And so it's not hard to coordinate what your news agencies are doing with what your fiction agencies are doing. It's quite simple, actually, because everybody, first of all, is bound by their wage slave paycheck. That's how you control most people. You know, if you don't go along, you're not going to get your paycheck. And when it comes to the media and these people, Anderson Cooper and these people are known intelligence operatives. They're known openly to have been interns of the CIA and so forth. How many times have reporters come out and said that the media is completely controlled by the Pentagon and the CIA, and they're all in league and all in step, and that's why they don't ever deviate from the narratives on these stories. It's always the same. The overall agenda marches forward, and that's what really all you have to understand how this can be faked. I'm not saying that real events don't happen or that people don't get killed. I'm just saying that I don't know another way to make sense of what I see before me that is rational.
Right. Well, let's see here if there's anything else we should kind of touch upon in terms of this case. As I said, I think the most interesting thing is going to be to see what motive they release, if any, whatever they, you know, concoct or find, or, you know, whatever this might turn out to be. That's going to be very interesting to see how they spin it. But it almost seemed to me that, you know, it was interesting to see the different sides, the reactions to, because you saw everyone was like rooting for who they hate most, you know, so you had a lot of liberals
wanted it
to be whites, right? And then
that's what I was about to say. Yeah. They were hoping it was going to be white guys, right?
Yeah. And then you had the opposition saying, you know, hope it's the Muslims. And that's in itself is interesting. It's almost like the whole thing in itself was like, because very little initially, which was interesting, was speculated upon, I noticed. I remember in the Dylann Roof thing, it was practically immediately was white guy, white guy, white guy. In this case, it was nothing at all. And it's almost like, I wonder if are they monitoring social media? Are they monitoring reactions to see what direction they go? And then they can go with whatever they want to. I admit, who knows, right? Who knows how advanced they are on these things these days?
Well, I think it's highly advanced if we look back to Jade Helm, for example. Now, the alternative media circus made a big deal out of this in completely the wrong way. Jade Helm had nothing to do with martial law or some big takeover, and I wrote months ago what Jade Helm was. It has to do with AI and algorithmic tracking, because you can actually find those documents to talk about it. So rather than speculating about Walmarts and FEMA camps, it has nothing to do with that. It had to do with the way that they run wargaming scenarios, and what they do is they will track exactly what you said, the buzz on social media and the reactions of the public, the chatter on cell phones, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then that goes into how the wargaming is super uber duper sophisticated. Like I can't, a lot of it's over my head. I read a good bit of the documents and it's kind of difficult to try to lay out, but it has to do with simulant world situations is what they call it, simulant world scenarios. So they'll create a fictional scenario, but they need a lot of data to do that. So you need a lot of chatter and what's going back and forth from, say, seven or eight states. And then you, in a fictional 3D, say, like a video game type model, you'll run these different simulants, right? And so what that does is that can give you predictive accuracy. I'm not obviously not 100%, but those kinds of things help predict future scenarios based on present situations. So it's very sophisticated, very philosophical. But I think that's really what's going on. And you can look at I think Boeing and Raytheon, these different big defense contractors actually have public pages that discuss what these things do and how the technology works and what it's geared towards. And it's all about wargaming and simulant scenarios. So it has nothing to do with tossing people into a FEMA camp, because we already live under a kind of globalist world order. They don't need to toss people into FEMA camps. FEMA camp is when you sit and watch the Disney Channel all night. That's your FEMA camp already.
Right.
So you have to situate these kinds of capstone events and these so-called events into this bigger picture that you're talking about. And that's why immediately, what do the politicians do? Well, they come on and say, it's guns, it's guns, it's guns, it's guns. It's always guns.
Right.
And then everybody goes and buys 10 times the guns that they would have normally bought. And Obama says he's going to put an executive action forth to take care of the gun problem. And so that's all on one level very, very real. I would tend to agree that with certain people who, I mean, you're not, like we said before, I think you and I talked about, you're not going to collect everybody's guns. But what you can do is try to state by state pass legislation. And now that's mm-hmm. California is already a massively restricted gun zone.
Right.
So
it should have worked then.
You would think, right.
Yeah.
But probably what will happen is, I mean, there's already gun restrictions in California anyway. But so what they're going to do is, I've lived in California when I was young, and then when I moved, you could see how California would be a test bed, and then things will filter out into the rest of the nation 15 or 20 years later. I think we talked about this too, because California is kind of like Europe in terms of being ahead of the rest of the nation, so-called, in terms of, well, they're more progressive. Well, which that just means more self-destructive.
Yeah.
But you have to keep in mind too, California is a almost total military-industrial complex state. My dad was stationed at the naval base there. The Navy is huge there. They run numerous facilities. Hollywood is all tied into that. So that's, you know, that's straight up New World Order, so to speak. There's no question about that, right? Vacaville facility, Presidio, you know, everything in terms of the Navy is very much California based.
Right. Yeah.
And that, what I'm saying by that is that would make it much simpler for running some sort of scenario like this, is, you know, being in a place where you have a massive power base like that. But yeah, I mean, I don't. How else do we explain this? Why would the media behave so bizarrely in this situation? I guess maybe you could argue that if it's a real shooting, they just didn't know what to do with it, because it doesn't go along with the so-called liberal narrative. But when we take that route, as some of the so-called far right does, then we're back at 9/11 being, I think we're setting ourselves up to be used, because we're going to buy into a false narrative where we're not fingering who the real culprits are. The real culprits aren't some caliphate that's suddenly existing, supposedly, in the three nations that the U.S. invaded in the last decade.
Right, right.
The real culprits are the people at the Brookings Institute that planned the destruction of Syria openly back in 2012.
And those who advocate for multiculturalism in the West, so that is ultimately enabled as the excuse for this, right? I mean, sure, it might have been something else if we didn't get to this point, but ultimately, the reasoning why Islam as an enemy works within, as it does now, is because it exists within the West. It's been let in. So,
yes.
Obviously, if they were honest about, yeah, let's talk about how they're trying to use this now, but because if they were honest about doing something about this, to preventing this from ever happening again, the actions would have been to stop these migrants pouring into Europe, and they would have, you know, have some kind of border control. They say that's it. We can't just let anybody in. We have to do background checks on those who do come in. We have to get control. We have to kick out those who already have committed these kinds of crimes, or we have on the watch lists, etc. No, the solution to, in their view, is to go bomb Syria and to ultimately, you know, create more conditions for what drove a lot of migrants
exactly
into Europe to begin with.
Yep.
And see, here's my beef then with, you know, with a lot of people who are simply, who simply hate Islam for what it is, right? I mean, I take a third position on this, basically. I don't like that Islam is in Europe. I don't think that that's creating good conditions. I think that it's creating violence and problems, and obviously we can see the tremendous increase in crime. Rapes after this migrant crisis have been tremendous horrors of gang rapes in Europe. It just doesn't work, right? But to those who take the false flag route in these cases, I feel that sometimes they do that and they view that through the lens of all the events. I'm just basically saying, well, if the intelligence services didn't get involved in this kind of stuff, it would have been, what, peaches and cream. It would just be lovely between everybody. It wouldn't be any problem. We would live in peace and sing kumbaya, and that's just not the truth either, you know. So it's exactly. like both of these things are true, and both of them are false at the same time. They're not, they aren't contradictory. What we have to understand is that they, just as you say, they use the momentum of the anger that understandably is there after these events and do something completely different over in the other part of the world as opposed to fixing the problem back home. I have so much to say about it, but give me your take on it.
I couldn't agree more. And what you're talking about, on the one hand, okay, so if we talk about the dynamics of the so-called alternative media and the people that inhabit that sphere, this would arise most likely out of the tradition of old-line journalism and progressivism. I'm speaking here in the U.S., the gumshoe, this kind of thing, the straw hat detective. And so this would be kind of a more of a progressive mindset of the I'm writing for the people, I'm fighting the big evil giants. And what I'm saying is that citizen journalism, this is a kind of inherently a leftist progressive idea. And that motivation, that mindset, and we see it in alternative media with the conspiracy world, that, you know, the blame is placed, oh, it's always this oligarch, it's always this elite, right. It's always these billionaires, it's always the people with the money. This is the source of all evils in the world. Well, that's a very naive view of humanity. Humans are, most humans are problematic and have faults. In other words, what I'm getting at is it's just as much a fault of the stupidity of the public and the mass audience as it is the machinations of the evil oligarch. So both of these things are true, and the main this older idea of citizen journalism and this kind of stuff is just as much a product of a false mindset, a false dialectic of the old right-left dialectic. And the old right-left dialectic comes out of the French Revolution. It's completely concocted and manufactured because both of those options are false options. It's do you want conservative revolution or do you want leftist revolution? And both of those revolutions out of France, the Girondins and the Jacobins, what if they're both crap? What if they're both bullshit? That's right. That's my view. And so that may sound disconnected, but it plays into modern thought and philosophy because we still live in this world that's an outworking of the revolutions that sought to topple all the monarchies and sought to basically install so-called enlightened Freemasonic republics across the globe. This is the world in which we now live. You don't see princes and kings. You see republics, supposedly, democratic republics. Well, that's a bunch of baloney. So, in other words, what we have then is, as a part of this dialectic, well, if you don't like that, then your option is to find a reactionary group that appears to be nationalistic. Oh, well, here's the English Defense League, and so the EDL must be good because they oppose Islam, and when I walk down my street, which used to be traditional Britain, now all I see is, Muslims everywhere. Now, this is a legitimate criticism.
But absolutely.
Who's at fault here in this? Is it really just some liberal politician? This is the problem, is that it's directed the fingering of who the real bad guy is the big trick.
Well, the Muslims hasn't, sorry to interrupt, but the Muslims hasn't opened the borders. They're not here. They're here because someone is allowing them to be here.
Yes, it's like, as I've said to you before, Mexican gangs. Is MS-13 a bad gang? Yes. If I go and if someone knocks out the head of the MS-13 cartel, is that going to solve the situation? No. Why? Because it's a corporate plan to have open borders, as the corporations openly state in what they fund. They openly fund open borders. That's who's behind it. It's the big banks behind those corporations, and it's no different in Europe with we can go all the way back to the older imperial plan, the Kalergi plan, which explicitly argued for pan-Europeanism. And it was both a joint Rothschild Catholic and Zionist idea that, oh, it would be a great idea to have a completely homogenized, multi-cult Europe. And yes, you're going to have tensions with this, but you have to understand that it's just like 9/11. So just because we're saying, oh, Saudis are involved in this, it doesn't fit into a simple thing to say, well, then the Saudi Arabians must be the enemies of the U.S., right?
Right.
That's not how it works. It's backdoor deals with, you know, big oil companies, big banks, backdoor deals with AIG involved in 9/11. It's put options. It's stealing a bunch of money that Rumsfeld says he couldn't find, right? Oops, where'd it go? Trillions of dollars missing. That's what's going on. And you have to understand it's a global system already, right? Since Bretton Woods, since World War II, the global economy is integrated. And it was set up that way on purpose, and that's why the BIS has most of the nations on Earth as part of its banking fraternity. This is what I tried to argue with Roman when we got into it over this, is that you really, it's a question over degree of independent actors. And I just don't believe that there are that many independent actors in the world. Certainly there are places like Syria that they want to reorganize. But I don't believe that you can have all of these independent actors whom the intelligence agencies watch for years just suddenly spring up with all this terror. It's the same way with 9/11. Right? That event was absolutely planned and organized. That's what they wanted to happen. It fits perfectly in with then the justification for later geopolitical moves, as well as domestic surveillance with the rise of the NSA and the curtailing of individual rights. And it's not going to be any different with what happened with Paris and what happened in Europe. Is that it's just the same thing over and over and over. So I'm still looking for the radical terror, but I think that's homegrown, supposedly. But all you have to do is consider the fact that the Wahhabi, the Jihad, the Salafists, that's not based on something from the 1400s or from the 700s. This is a modern movement that is completely and totally a creation of British intelligence from 100 years ago.
Right, right.
The Muslim Brotherhood comes out of guys who were British Masons that were sent as agents of the crown to go and establish the Muslim Brotherhood, because they openly said, the Lords of London openly wrote letters about this, of how great it would be to have a radical Islamic movement. Now, you said, why would they do that? Well, all you have to do is think about, if you're from the U.S., for example, we think about examples like Tim McVeigh and the Elohim City, which is this radical Christian identity group, which is completely a concocted FBI-run situation. Or we think about, I would argue that Westboro Baptist Church is another one of these Fed-run things. And what they do is they provocateur. It's agitprop. And all it does is serve to inflame the public and to polarize. That's all. Because most of the public they don't know anything about what a Salafist is. They don't know about, you know, Turkish Janissaries or the history of the Ottoman Empire. What they know about is ragheads and bombs, right? 9/11. And so it's just a matter of associating things at a very base, childish level to polarize the mass audience.
Right. And, well, there's a couple of things here we can talk about. One of the things and one of the critiques is the far right or the alt-right nationalist, a growing nationalist crowd in Europe. They seem to be, not all, of course not, I'm not trying to say everyone's like that, but they're very reluctant to kind of focus on the conspiracy aspect of this.
Yes.
or the bigger kind of, in some cases, the bigger geopolitical game. That, and my beef with that is that the belief in a government, because that's ultimately what it comes down to when these kinds of events happen. We believe the authorities, we believe the elite, we believe what they tell us, the governments. So the belief in that government, who ultimately is anti-white, folks, imposing this population replacement and everything else, should not be, you know, trusted when it comes to foreign policy. If they're so horrible on domestic policy, why do we believe them here all of a sudden, right? So it's this idea that everyone knows how shitty and crappy politicians are, how all the system is working against us. It doesn't have our interests at heart. And so then when these things happen, understand the anger. I understand. As I said, I don't think that Islam has anything to do in Europe. I think it's there to create these problems and conflicts and this antagonism. So, but let's take care of that at home then. Let's not go over there and, you know, bomb ISIS or, you know, Syria. So the thing here is, though, and having said that, this is the quirk here. There seems to be a willingness also by many of the migrants that come to Europe to be also pawns in this game. Because I think that, you know, disenfranchised second generation migrants who feel lost in the West and ultimately maybe hated. They look at the liberal, you know, press to see how, you know, how wicked we are as Europeans, whatever. And they might actually turn to radical Islam. They might show, they see on TV how powerful ISIS are, for example. You know, this has been like an ad, basically, in some cases for them. And so this is furthering the agenda. So what I'm saying is that they seem to be willing, in some cases, to be pawns in the game. And then through their actions, they make it seem plausible for us to think that they could do something like these terror, you know, events. Because in some cases, that's what we experience when we actually have interactions with some of the migrants around us in Europe, especially. I can't speak that much for America, but there's definitely a heightened antagonism in Europe between these things, and it's just tremendously horrible to see that this is happening. But I mean, we haven't been united to begin with. We haven't been sitting holding hands singing Kumbaya. This is a very recent thing that we're forced together. So I don't think that we can say that this is, you know, somehow is breaking up a perfect, beautiful, you know, wonderful relationship that we had either. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I mean, nationalism a long time ago was a new thing. This is a late 1800s movement,
right.
The idea of nation states. So that would actually have been liberal at the time. And in fact, the revolutions of the late 1700s is what would set the stage for the idea of nationalism, which would be a kind of merchant revolution, right? So the right-wing revolutionaries would fit into this nationalist trend. And then, so geopolitics and history is, you know, a constantly sort of amorphous thing and that goes through different phases. But it's very difficult to use the terms right and left. I know that you're not saying that, but I'm just saying it's very difficult to use the terms right and left wing and really know exactly what we're talking about in terms of the history of geopolitics, especially in Europe. And so, for example, one reason that we can't trust so-called right-wing movements in Europe, and again, I let me preface it by saying that, you know, a lot of those views I would agree with, a lot of the things that Roman Bernard believes I would agree with, but when we look at the history of NATO, it's not like NATO is foreign to right-wing movements in Europe. They've used right-wing movements in Europe for a long time. What does that mean? NATO's right-wing? No, they're not. They're owned by the same oligarchs. They're the same people that go to Bilderberg.
They'll use whatever ideology they can to further their own goals, of course. We have to be absolutely
NATO's going to support this Kalergi plan. They're going to support this plan. It's NATO people who've said that European cultures have to die.
Right. Yep. It's it was Wesley Clark. Yeah. He's a Zionist, too, by the way, obviously. But he changed his name. Happens to be Jewish. But the thing is, let's talk about the media a little bit here. The reactions, also by people, and this perception that, you know, this is what the media does, or this is what the media does. It's kind of getting, you know, stuck among the bickering a little bit here. But it's fun to deconstruct some of these things. Basically, some people say, well, it's, you know, the media is right wing. It's going to ramp up hatred towards Muslims and all these kinds of things, either, and that's what it's about, etc. And there's so many inconsistencies here and things that just doesn't make sense that because they tell us, right, Muslims did 9/11, but you can't be Islamophobic. Mm-hmm. You can't have, you know, hatred for a group. That's morally wrong. I mean, we know that now. Everyone is trained in this political correctness. You can't think this or that about people, what have you. And if it was about ramping up hatred or causing conflict between us and them, why wouldn't they take every one of these cases of horrible rapes and lift that up in the media? I mean, why did they cover up Rotherham, for example, right?
I'll tell you why that is. My view is, number one, there is a plan to completely deconstruct Western peoples, to weaken them and to remove them, because they would be the most likely opposition to a New World Order. Secondly, this is my opinion. If you notice the narratives that are spun in the media, and I think this is a clue to figuring out what they do these events for. So it doesn't matter whether it's the Planned Parenthood shooting or whether it's these radical Islamist events. What happens is that the media will say, religious fundamentalism. So what I'm starting to think is that it more so has to do with the idea that religion itself is part of a problem, because I really think that what they want to do is to move people into just a completely – people are much more manageable when they're a Richard Dawkinsite type person, or a person who's just completely – Because religion is a competitor to the state or the world state or to consumerism, because what it does is it says that there's a body of tradition of some sort from history that in some way competes with the attention of where you're going to focus in the modern world, right? And the state, historically, if it can't co-opt religion, makes religion its enemy. It doesn't like it if it can't utilize it or turn it into some sort of status mythology. So what has to happen is that the religion has to be either destroyed or co-opted into the establishment.
Right. I mean, and
what works as a firewall is anything. So in other words, when they're talking about fundamentalism, right, we think they're talking like radicalism of jihadis or guys that like Eric Rudolph or something like this. They're wanting to broaden that to basically move this mass herd of morons into the idea of thinking just by association from media nuggets and giblets and talking points that anyone who has any kind of belief in a system other than the immediate PC download of the establishment is in some way radical.
Exactly. Well, of course, I mean, they think that these people coming into Europe are going to turn into good liberal progressives. I mean,
yes.
And that's one of the reasons too, obviously, that we see this. I mean, the point of the hatred here is that you're supposed to feel that way about Islam, right? Because they're a backwards, you know, tradition that's just doesn't fit the liberal world anymore, right? So when George Bush is talking about, you know, going over there, taking care of the problem and whatnot, it's not on, you know, I can't think that it's on a kind of an ethnic level or anything like that. This is about removing a problem and an opposition that stands in the way, even though that you can control people with religion. Yes, we don't have to get into that now, but the point is it's an updated version of the control mechanism. And I think that even, you know, as much as you can think that, you know, Islam is backwards or whatever, it's still in its own traditionalism kind of standing in the way, right, for that global progressive empire they're building.
You're not going to have, in a place where you have the belief in having children and not engaging in usury. I'm not saying that.
Right,
I know that there's this Islamic banking, which is part of so the radical Islamic banking networks actually do tie into, they will engage in usury, and that is part of the global banking establishment of the West. But these are places like Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Jordan, the havens of so-called radical Islam, which, by the way, are best friends with the United States and the Anglo-American establishment, and
right,
have been for 100 years. Now, but when we consider the fact that, okay, so I was looking at Rockefeller Foundation website the other day, and I was looking through all the things that they support, and they had a whole section, a whole page dedicated to women's issues in foreign countries. Now, when you look at the places where it's Islamic nations. The program was all about how we have to get the poor women in these countries access to abortions. We have to get them, we have to get them feminism, women's rights. We have to get them vaccines right away. Oh, it's such a dire situation. Don't you care about the poor women there? So
right.
From their vantage point, that's about, right? It has nothing. They don't care about belief system, except insofar as any kind of belief system can potentially be a firewall to moving us into the globo monoculture. That's the problem. That's why they don't like Christianity. And that's why I think you see the crafting of the stories as religious fundamentalism. But what they're going to do is just keep expanding that into anything anything that's just not completely mindless Hollywood garbage is going to be crafted and explained as religious fundamentalism. And it's a global program, by the way. So, but I would like to add too. So, to understand what's happening, if you understand that now, could there be radical Islamic homegrown terror? There could be, but I'm just saying that in the cases that I look at and investigate from the mainstream sources with it's themselves, it's continually explained to be a situation that consistently looks to be run by intelligence agencies. And I don't know how else to frame it. And it fits perfectly into the narrative. So, okay, so let's take ISIS. Well, where is ISIS located? Okay, so it happens to be their home bases are in places like Libya, Iraq, and now supposedly Syria. Well, on the border of Turkey, of course. Now, where are the places that we have invaded in the U.S. In the last few years? Well, we invaded, we toppled Gaddafi in Libya. We went into Iraq, right? Afghanistan. Well, that happens to be where Al-Qaeda is. So what we start to see is that the home base of these places, it just happens to be the places where we go. Now, if you talk to people, soldiers who've been over in these areas, they'll say, yeah, what a lot of these people are these fighters, they're just mercenaries. So they'll actually fight for us for a while, and if the funds dry up, they'll just switch sides, and they go fight for these other guys, right? And it's a whole mythology that al-Nusra is this mediocre force that's, Islam, radical Islam light. No, it's all the same groups. They're all given the same weapons, arms, and funding. It all comes through Turkey and Jordan, which are situated right there.
Yeah.
This has been reported even in mainstream media. Time magazine has talked about it. And so ISIS wouldn't exist if the NATO state Turkey wasn't involved in it. And Russia just came out, I think, in the last week and said that it looks like Erdogan and his son are actually profiting from the oil that the oil fields that ISIS has taken from Syria.
That's right. Yep. Yeah. They're doing deals with them right now, and that's, I want to get into that more in the next segment here. We're going to take a break shortly. There's just so much to discuss and so many things to squeeze in here. But that's good. That means it's a good conversation. So let's talk about your book a little bit first. Actually, I wanted to plug Esoteric Hollywood, Sex, Cults, and Symbolism in Film. It's a new book that you have out. We've, of course, spoken in some detail about some of these topics in the past that people can check out if you want to go into our archives and listen to those. But tell us a bit about the book, Jay, before we take a break here.
Sure. Well, this is going to be essentially the collection of my best film analyses as well as some that are not public. So a lot of people have been exposed to my work, thankfully, in the past year or two, thankfully to sites like yours and others. And so I've really seen a good surge in my traffic. And so people are getting exposed to this. And what I do is take a philosophical approach to film and look at what is really going on in a lot of these stories and how many things that we think are fictional actually are based on real-world scenarios, be they espionage, geopolitics, conspiracy, or even things esoteric and metaphysical. So what I do is just kind of deconstruct a lot of popular films and give something a little more sophisticated than what you might read at some place like Vigilant Citizen, something a little more academic, but not so obscure as to lose readers. So it's comparable to if you've ever taken a literature class, right? It would be comparable to that, but I try to tie it into real world events and give people eyes to see in terms of when they're watching all this Hollywood propaganda to view it from a different perspective and see it for what it really is.
And obviously the website is jaceanalysis.com. There's plenty of links there to the books, but of course the I guess the best place to get it is Amazon, right?
Yeah, Trine Day is publishing it, so you can get it from Trine Day directly, or you can get it from Amazon, and it's Esoteric Hollywood. And I believe it's sometime in June 2016, but it is available for pre-order now.
Oh, okay. See, yeah, I thought it was out. See, but okay, that's good. Good to know. We'll add a link to the book, of course, folks. So if you're listening in the archives, it might be available already. So do check it out. Okay, very good. Syria, Russia, and Turkey, and of course the whole deal there with the conflict in Syria and also Islam in the West are some of the things we'll continue to talk about in the second hour. So stay with us, folks. We'll be right back.
Let's take your car and do a music park, USA.
Thank you for listening. Don't miss the second hour with Jay Dyer as we continue our conversation and expand on the recent tension between Russia and Turkey. And Turkey, by the way, who's a NATO member, seem to support and make sure that ISIS is functioning properly in the region, especially considering that it now looks like they're buying oil from the group that has been classified by NATO and other countries as a terrorist organization. Strange, isn't it? We also discussed the big picture, some overarching, grand, long-term geopolitical games that are run by those controlling the West, and then further we explore on what level we should fight against all of this. But as we start, we talk more about conspiracy and how there are people that are shying away from the possibility that we have enemies within the West that are working against our interests. I think that is pretty clear to most who are listening to this program. It's just a question of how far they would be willing to go. After having an intention to replace the population, I don't think that much else would be that shocking, frankly. But we'll get into that a bit more in terms of the resistance, if you will, to the false flag aspect. And also on the flip side, how that's used by some people to shy away altogether that there really is a problem with Islam within Europe. RedIceMembers.com. Go there to subscribe and tune in to the second hour. Don't miss it. Well, before we continue, let me just mention that we are going to bump up the prices for our subscriptions in about a week from now. We haven't raised our prices since we started, and we're coming up on our 10th year. And unfortunately, as you probably know all too well, the currencies that we use are being devalued all the time. You pay more for less, basically. So if you've been thinking about signing up, do that now before we nudge the prices for a membership. If you have a recurring subscription that auto-renews, this will not change for you. Obviously, we can't begin to charge you more for this in the middle of it. So you'll be on the same price. You will remain the same. So don't worry about that. This is only for new one-time payments and new recurring subscriptions. No reason to panic. We have one-time payments, you know, from 3 months up to 2 years. And then we also have recurring three-month subscriptions. And if you want a good deal, by the way, access to over 1,000 radio shows, interviews on a ton of different topics and video specials, inside episodes, films, and of course growing each week, then sign up for a 3 month recurring subscription now. You know, that way you get the best deal and you'll keep paying the lower prices as well. This is a recommendation to you who might have been, you know, listening for a long time and not yet subscribed, but been thinking about doing it. So now is a good time to do it, and of course, at the same time, there's never a bad time to support us and what we do. We are also going to add, you know, U.S. dollars as a currency, by the way, to make it easier for our American audience, so, you know, you don't have to mess with transaction rates and all that stuff. But the dollar and the euro is remarkably close right now, almost at the same value. But who knows? This might change very quickly. So thank you so much to the European Union for tanking the currency. So, anyway, RedIceMembers.com has all the details for you. Go check it out. Upcoming, we have Gavin Kilgore, Pete Papahedakis, Victor Thorne, Libertarian Realist, and Jenny Upton. You can see our upcoming guests in the Radio Archive. We'll proceed right now with Jay Dyer in the second hour. Stay tuned. Thank you so much for listening.